There's a question, both irresponsible and brave, that's been keeping me up at night, that's been creating sweat in my palms, and that question is, will Aaron Judge or could Aaron Judge crank 74 home runs in a single season?
We will ask that and review all the weekend action on this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Aaron, he doesn't have any singles, though. He just keeps hitting home runs.
Aaron Judge could win the Little League World Series by himself. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who genuinely appreciates Yankees fans saying please when they chant please stay Soto. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and a little kindness goes a long way.
Yankees fans famously known for their manners and etiquette, and yeah. I think that was on display during their ultra kind and pleading but also respectful phrasing, asking Mr. Soto, hey, stick around. I don't remember. Did they do the exact same thing for Aaron Judge, or was it more? I didn't think they needed to, because they were like, of course Aaron Judge is staying. Yeah. You know, they didn't have to beg him.
I like the idea of the Yankees fans saying, dearest Juan Soto, would you please consider staying here in the beautiful Big Apple?
We are going to get to the please stay Soto chance. Aaron Judge cannot stop hitting home runs. And it's a Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast, so we have a lot to get to. But Jake, we have to talk about it because we were both watching it yesterday. Before we get to the Major League Baseball, let us tip our cap to the Lake Mary, Florida Little League, who yesterday won the first ever Little League World Series title in state history. Yes, the state of Florida. You would think those kids would have won one by now, but and it's not the same kids, obviously. So history like this is always a little bit goofy. However, the fact that Florida had a representative get to the championship game in Williamsport 8 times before this year without winning was a good kind of side note to what was a ridiculous championship game against Chinese Taipei.
Well, it's because all those kids in Florida who are 12 have already been playing perfect game tournaments for 6 years by the time they're old enough. They're the right age to be in the Little League World Series.
That's a good point. That's maybe contributes more to the recent shortcomings of the states, right? Because I don't know if that certainly doesn't help explain them losing in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. But this was a ridiculous game. Obviously, we love Little League World Series. And ultimately, if you saw the ending, tough game. It was a tie game. It was we got the extra automatic runner in the eighth inning. And this Taiwan team that had essentially gotten to the championship game by not screwing up. We talk about this a lot in a Division III baseball context, how far you can get by not screwing up. They didn't walk anyone. They didn't make any defensive mistakes. They would take their walks. They would run the bases well. And they would just do just enough to beat every other team. They were undefeated going into this game. And ultimately, they lose on a failed bunt coverage. And it's so perfect and so brutal to watch at the same time.
It's one of the most unique ways I've ever seen any baseball game end. I highly recommend going and watching the clip. Runner on second, zero outs.
Hitter
bunts down the first baseline. First pitch. Pitcher picks up the ball and turns to throw it to first to get the out. And there's just nobody there.
No one even close.
No one even in the neighborhood. The second baseman was covering second. First baseman had charged. And he was expecting someone to be there. Just throws it down the right field line. And the runner is not even really at third base yet, right? But it's just game's over, right? Like there's another 6 seconds of baseball that needs to be played, but everyone just knows it's over. And the moment I'll remember is the kid throws it and the first base coach just immediately, the first base man coach, right? Not a child, just throws his hand in the air and just starts running home because he knows that his team has won it.
Yeah. That combined with the third base coach, who is, I believe, the head coach for Florida, running directly to the second baseman who did not cover, who was in tears. I mean, the whole team is in tears. I mean, this is like the best and worst part of the Little League World Series is just how quickly it starts. I mean, there are games during these last few ones where like the pitcher is like visibly in tears on the mound while they're trying to like keep their team in the game. Like it's kind of an incredible spectacle. I know some people are uncomfortable with it, but it is still a very special event and an amazing way to win. I mean, Florida had to come back through the elimination bracket. They had played 8 games in, 8 days or whatever, and it was a hell of an ending. So, Williamsport, we love you, and I'm maybe trying to get there next year when the Mariners are there playing the Mets.
How many home runs would Aaron Judge hit on a Little League-sized field in a season? I want to know. Everything else is the same. Okay? Mm-hmm. Big league pitchers, big league outfielders.
Right.
But whenever Aaron Judge steps up to the plate, they press a button and the fences come into 200 feet. Right? Yeah. Is he hitting 200 homers? Is he hitting 150?
This is the best part is I don't know if someone has written a whole thing. I've definitely seen tweets along these lines because you can do this now with all the Statcast just like distance stuff. Like you can answer this question. So maybe I'll do this for UGLA. Later this week, because there is an actual answer for this. It certainly would not help Aaron Judge hitting balls that were not home runs, which right now in major league stadiums, I believe his last 6 or 7 hits are home runs. And that is a good place to start as we transition to our major league coverage on this Monday edition of Baseball Barbercast. Normally, we go in order of the sweeps and the mops. However, with respect to the Blue Jays, we will get to your mop of the Angels, but we are going to start in the Bronx because the Yankees, while they did not sweep the Rockies, and honestly, not sweeping the Rockies at this point in the season, especially at home, is somewhat unforgivable considering the stakes and the margin for error in these postseason races. But you know what? Yankees fans don't care because they sequenced it perfectly. You win. It's all about losing that Saturday game and dominating on Sunday to keep the vibes high. And Aaron Judge and the Yankees made sure that if you were going to drop a game to the Rockies, it would be on Saturday afternoon.
I'm going to disagree with 2 quick things you said. Number one, it was a Will Warren spot start, and he just got crushed. That's really all that happened on Saturday. And at the same time, it was Old Timers Day, so you probably would have preferred to lose on Friday and not on Saturday in this particular weekend. But the takeaway here, and our little segment we like to call nuclear overreaction, is that I, for the first time, think Aaron Judge could one day hit 74 home runs in a season. He's not going to do it this year. Let's just be clear. He's up to 51. He hit 2 on Sunday. He is on pace, I believe, for 63 or 64, which would break his own record of 62 that he had in the 2022 season. But just remember, Jordan, Aaron Judge was not good to start this season. Okay. I went back and looked on May 4th, Star Wars Day. He had 6 homers, which is a pace of 27, 28 home runs over a full season. For Aaron Judge, I mean, that is weak.
It is
weak crap.
At this point, the idea of him hitting less than 40 years is hard to imagine.
Since that day, he has 45 in 94 games. 45 homers in 94 games, which is a 77 home run pace. Now, doing that over 162 versus Judge would probably in a full season play like 158 games, whatever.
Are you explaining to me why it's hard to get to 70?
Yeah, it's really difficult to hit 74 home runs, right?
Thanks.
Really not easy.
Thanks. Okay, yeah, no, I appreciate that.
But he's been on a pace above 74 for 4 months now. And so I think that whenever someone gets hot, can I give baseball media like a pat on the back? We so rarely bring up Bonds' record in a single season. Because it is an irresponsible thing to do, right? It's irresponsible. Right. And so if a guy gets really hot in April, no one really is ever like, could he catch Bonds? Because we all understand that's ludicrous.
Yeah.
But Judge is he's not making it a reality, but he's making it a possibility, an improbability. Yeah. It is now an improbability instead of an impossibility. That is what I would say.
So I will say that, I mean, this is a nuclear overreaction for a reason. We are at least stretching our optimism for such a feat mildly. But I understand what you're saying. This is a long time to be on a 77 home run pace. All that is fair. I think I'll start with the cold water. It's also hard to imagine him being much better. I know we said that 2 years ago and he's leveled up this year, right? It's hard for him to be imagined getting more pitches than he is right now.
He doesn't need to be any better. He doesn't need to be any better. He needs to be what he's been over 4 months.
Do it over another 50 games. That's sure. Like, that's one way to put it, right?
You could imagine a scenario where he hits 74 home runs over a 162 game span that wraps around into the beginning of next season. That's totally possible.
That's true. That's true. Assuming he doesn't have another bad April, right? So that's fair. That's all fair. So again, I guess I don't really need to caveat why I don't think it's really ever going to get close. However, here are the reasons why. The one reason why I think it could happen again, and then another just bigger picture and judge thing, if they juice the balls again. So that is the other kind of wild card of just home run numbers. You know, not that he needs the help, but it is a thing that, as we know, when it happened in 17 and 19 and home runs went up an absurd degree across the league, we have not seen the ball travel like that since then. If for whatever reason it returned to those levels, now there are more, I'm not saying pop-ups, but there are more balls which Aaron Judge is regularly hitting in the air that are going over the fence. That is a thing where you would possibly see it closer to, you know, 70 and so on. So I'll just say all that. Anyway, the bigger picture thing is a very basic fun fact, which, you know, James Smythe, the fantastic Yankees researcher and who is always delivering for the S Network, always delivering good ones. But this is very basic. Aaron Judge has 350 homer seasons now. That's
the only other players.
Yeah.
I put this in my weekend recap.
Mm-hmm.
He's the fifth player to ever do it.
Yep.
Of those other four, three of them would be Hall of Famers if not for steroid connections. And that's Barry Bonds.
No, Barry Bonds.
Sorry, not Barry Bonds.
Yeah, not Barry Bonds. Yeah.
Mark McGwire.
Just part of this amazing
which
conversation.
Which is why it's amazing. Yeah. Right. It's Mark McGwire, Alex Rodriguez, Sammy Sosa. And then the fourth guy is literally Babe Ruth. And that's Babe Ruth.
And so when you put that in perspective and you consider, okay, maybe he never gets to Aaron Judge's or Barry Bonds' single season record, but it's certainly plausible that he has a fourth, you know, 50 homer season and maybe even a fifth, which has never been done. I mean, those are the kinds of things that we're really starting to talk about when we are discussing not just this is it one of the greatest individual seasons of all time, but why he's having one of the great careers of all time. Yes. And while his career totals will both impress and underwhelm because of how late he got started, I think that is part of the Aaron Judge conversation that we will start to have in the coming years as well, is just where he ranks in the all-time greats, because packing this many home runs into this amount of time is really staggering. So that's Aaron Judge. I'm glad we deserve to start the show with him. Is there anything else on him before we get to the Feliz de Soto stuff before we continue?
Aaron Judge could really hit that ball.
Yeah. Yeah, he can. He sure can. But he was not the only Yankee hitting that ball on Sunday, as he went back-to-back-to-back with Juan Soto and Giancarlo Stanton. Giancarlo really making a difference in this lineup. What a surprise. Nice to see him hitting the ball over the fence again. But Juan Soto, who had been in a bit of a funk, honestly, over the previous week and a half or so, he gets a home run as well. We get Please Stay Soto chants in the bleachers that he obviously can hear. Aaron Judge is almost kind of like keeping the chants going, which is very amusing. And then, of course, we have a quote that I believe Juan Soto has already given multiple times this season, which is, you got to talk to Cashman. And all of that is true, right? Which to me makes
okay,
me think.
So yeah. I want to hop in right here. It's not Cashman.
Well, that's also
it's
true.
It's not
yes.
Cashman.
We've
like,
made this point.
Brian Cashman, yes. Who is the general manager of the Yankees, would like to, right? Some parts of roster building are difficult. I also, if I was running the Yankees, would do what I could to keep Juan Soto around. Yeah. That's not that complicated. This is not a Cashman question. It's a Hal Steinbrenner, the owner of the Yankees.
Correct.
He needs to make that decision for how much money he is willing to shell out to keep Juan Soto around. The reason that we haven't seen any sort of in-season extension is because going to the open market is only going to drive that price up.
Yeah, right.
Why would you sign the extension? Just take the money and you can get the same or more in January than you could now.
Yeah, I don't think any Yankees fans are disillusioned to think that an extension is getting done at this point. But again, it's funny stuff. I mean, the funny thing I think is like everyone going to like somehow directing their cheers towards the owner's box. I assume you can't see Steinbrenner during games, very rarely, if ever.
Keep him, Hal.
Exactly. That is a little more logical plea. But anyway, it's all in good fun, and we love Juan Soto. So
I just like the idea that, you know, Soto has Mets and Yankees offers on the table in January, and they're pretty close. And he's sitting there and he says, "Ooh, but the bleacher creature said please." So,
oh, wait a minute.
They did say please. No, yeah. I think this is great. And like, part of it's going to be the money. It obviously, like, it's whoever offers him the most money is where he's going to go. Like, yeah. Duh, right.
Yep.
But if it all comes down to something, it's really close and the soft factors matter. Making sure that Juan Soto is happy in the Bronx has a non-zero percentage of importance. And our producer, Yankees fan, Andrew Hartz, mentioned that what is really important in quotes, is that if Juan Soto goes like over 10 in the ALDS or the wildcard round or whatever, don't boo him.
That would be an easy way to undo the goodwill.
Don't boo him. Yeah. Right? This is the one guy.
Right. And if he doesn't go to the Yankees or the Mets, he'll probably sign with the Dodgers. Let's transition to the Dodgers, Jake. In our next segment, first time for everything, this Ohtani fella continues to make some history along this here season. And I will say this weekend was a good, like, grateful to be watching and working in baseball in 2024. Right. Like, it's nice. Again, it's we're doing it every day and we're very lucky. But it's just like, oh, like, yeah, no, I am in it with Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge doing this all the time. I am very, very lucky to be able to say that. And when Shohei Ohtani hits a walk off grand slam to go 40-40, it's pretty cool. It's hard to really script it much better. And then the next day he throws a bullpen and then hits another home run. Right. He's working his way back from Tommy John. And he might go 50-50. I mean, it's definitely in play.
He's definitely going 45-45.
Right. And obviously the list gets shorter and shorter of guys that have done that. So, I mean, yeah, man, I will say my favorite parts of the weekend were what Junior Caminero was doing in Dodger Stadium. But the Ohtani stuff, the home run that you hit the next day.
You're such a hipster. Screw off. You cannot tell me that you watch Shohei Ohtani go 40-40 and you're like, but Junior Caminero is really like, yes, that's Junior Caminero
exactly
is cool.
It's exactly what happened. But no, the awesome, thing dude. is the Ohtani, like, first of all, the base stealing. I mean, if we're going to have a 40-40 conversation, I do feel like the base stealing is worth zeroing in on.
Yeah, I want to zoom out and talk about 40-40 for a second. So 40-40 club, 40 homers, 40 steals. At the beginning of last season, it had only ever happened four times. Jose Canseco, Barry Bonds, Alex Rodriguez, and the one and only Alfonso Soriano. Okay.
Yes.
That's four times. Now, why was it so hard to do? For a lot of baseball history, there were just simply not athletes that could do both of those things. There were people stealing 40 bases all the time, and hitting 40 home runs was relatively commonplace. Mm-hmm. But just human beings couldn't do both of those things, right? Like the training and the athleticism, we just weren't there yet, okay? Then we get these freaks like Canseco and Bonds and A-Rod. And, I mean, you could have maybe, if you want to throw the word steroids in there, you could do that, but we're not going to have it, okay? Then we change the stolen base rules, okay? We make it much easier to swipe a bag. And last year, Ronald Acuna Jr. goes, I believe, 41-73, is that right? 41 homers, 73 steals?
Yes, 41-73, correct.
And that one was easy to include, I'm going to put this in quotes, people, legitimately, because he's still 73, right? And it was like, oh, with the old rules, he easily would have stole 40. And I think we all agree with that, right? Mm-hmm. Now we have, for two consecutive years, someone going 40-40, and that's a big reason why Ohtani getting to 40-40 was just less of a big deal. If Acuna hadn't done it last year, this is something we would have been talking about a lot more. And honestly, something we should have been talking about a lot more. Now, I want to be very clear about something. Multiple things could be true, right? It is easier than ever to accomplish this feat based upon the rules of the sport. Okay. It is outrageously impressive for Shohei Ohtani to do this. Like, comically impressive. Yeah. He got hurt, got Tommy John, realized he wasn't going to be pitching this year. Edwin is like, I'll run this year. I don't need to worry about having energy to pitch or worry about getting injured. I'll just run all the time. And then he did.
Right. Well, the bigger picture is they're like, hey, Shohei, you can't pitch this year. Sorry, dude. Can't do all your historic two-way stuff. Oh, first guy since Babe Ruth to do blah, blah, blah. He's like, all right, that's fine. I'll just make history as essentially the greatest DH season of all time. That is also a thing that's on the table for me. And I think it's important when you say, oh, well, you know, he's running now because he can, but also because of the rules, right? Well, I know last year he was still worrying about pitching. But what's so impressive, I mean, he stole 26 bags in 2021, but he was caught 10 times. So that's not super efficient. He stole only 11 in 2022 and 20 last year and was caught 6 times. So, I mean, we've known that he's really fast. That's something we've said about Ohtani for a while. Managers love saying, I've heard like 3 different managers be like, you know, the most underrated thing about Ohtani is how fast he is. And it's like, You're honestly probably right about that.
Sure.
That, yeah, like, sure, right, okay. But that wasn't always translating into 40 stolen bases, possibly 50 stolen bases at a ridiculously efficient clip. He's only been caught 4 times. So it's
that's
just
like going ability, to, yeah. That's like going to the Taj Mahal and being like, you know, the snack cart. Why? It's amazing.
It's like it might have been, but.
It's like, okay, yeah, but like, yeah. Look at that.
But yeah, so he's, you know, 91% success rate is just incredible. So yeah, I think that what he's been able to commit to in terms of improving that part of his game is not insignificant. And yeah, I guess 50-50 is a thing that might happen. We certainly have never seen that before. I guess so. Soriano was 46 homers and 41 steals. Larry Walker in 97 had 49 homers, 33 steals. So like there's other versions closer to that, but 50-50 would be, and then when you consider Acuna, you know, only had 41 home runs last year, you know, Ohtani 50 homers seems more likely than Ohtani 50 steals at this point, but both are very much in play.
Jordan, if he has 49 homers and 49 steals, we need to go to the Dodger game and we need to walk up and down the aisles and we need to scream 50-50.
Oh man, what a night, especially at a Dodger Stadium game. Think about the 50-50 pot. Oh,
we could raise a lot of money.
I mean, they're raising a lot of money in Akron. You know, I went to the double A game and they're like, the 50-50 jackpot is whatever. I'm like, oh my gosh, people are going in on 50-50. That's a great joke. I appreciate that.
Dodgers win the series over Tampa. You mentioned rookie Junior Caminero just on fire.
Yeah,
he's awesome. And look, the Rays are meh this year. They're going to be so good soon.
And we talked about prospects last week, how many guys they have coming, but just like getting to watch Caminero now, again, he is Caminero's coming up next inning. I'm going to tune over and watch, switched over to the Rays game and watch him swing. And that in and of itself is an achievement. He will surely go into Seattle this week and hit a bunch of home runs in ways that you are not supposed to hit home runs in Seattle. Jake, let's take a break. And when we return, we will talk about the mop that happened north of the border, a sweep that happened at Fenway Park, and a whole bunch more baseball.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Go get a bucket. Fill it with water. Put some soap in there. Go into your closet. I don't actually have a closet in my house because I live in New York. We like don't have. Like we don't
have more. I have more closets than I know what to do with.
Yeah, I'm sure. Mr. Live in Ohio.
You know, like we have a
2-bedroom apartment. I have a nice, lovely apartment. I'm not complaining. I like where I live.
Good place.
Got a great deal on it. But we have, you know, two like closets for clothing, but there's no closets for stuff, right? So like my mop is not in a closet.
No, no, no. Whereas here at my palatial estate in rural Ohio, we got just the cleaning closet. Just this is the cleaning supplies are in this closet. And the mop is one of those things. And the Toronto Blue Jays this weekend welcomed the Angels of Anaheim to Toronto, where they have not been giving their fans much to cheer about. However, after this four-game whooping, this four-game mopping of the Angels, the Blue Jays are now, I believe, 13-9 in August, their best record of any month this season.
Whoa!
Playing mostly rookies and a bunch of pitchers you've never heard of. Good for them. The highlight of this weekend was Bowden Francis, nearly throwing a no-hitter on Saturday, pitching into the ninth inning before he allowed a home run to Taylor Ward. Taylor Ward afterwards giving some quotes saying, his stuff wasn't really that special. It was pretty hittable, even though it was objectively not very hittable for the rest of his teammates. I know this is Taylor Ward trying to sound like a hardo, but really he's just throwing his teammates under the bus by saying, how could you not hit this guy? So that was super hilarious. But then even more funny was the next day when Francis was on the broadcast. Chris Bassett stood behind him with a sign that said 15 innings, 2 hits, 20 strikeouts, hittable plus not special. So he's, of course, referring to Bowden Francis's last two starts. He has been very, very good recently. Kind of a, in fairness to Taylor Ward, it is a bit of a kitchen sink repertoire, but it's working. And for the Blue Jays, who had this expensive, fancy, you know, famous rotation coming into the year, for Bowden Francis to be the guy dominating recently with Chris Bassett behind him not doing that, is kind of a funny turn of events.
One descriptor that I have picked up over the last couple of years by being around more experienced baseball reporters, shouts out to a friend of the show, Andy McCullough, is the phrase fresh act, right? Something used to describe a character in the game who we just haven't really seen before. Bowden Francis as a guy is a fresh freaking act, okay? Yeah. He just go look at what he's wearing into the stadium. He looks like he's about to go skateboard in Venice Beach. And that in and of itself is very different. I remember having a conversation with him about like, he was into like grounding, right? Like he was walking around barefoot. He's a unique cat. I don't really think I can dedicate any more seconds to Blue Jays Angels in late August. I'm sorry.
That's extremely fair. That is totally fair. So let's move on to a much more consequential series result. And that, and more impressive, because again, Angels not great. Blue Jays not great. That's just a weird series. The Arizona Diamondbacks, who last Monday we were like, oh God, they just got swept by the Rays. Like we thought you were one of the best teams in baseball right now. Like what's going on? They go into Boston and just dominate. This was so impressive from the Snakes. The Red Sox continue to stink at home. The only teams with worse home records this season are the White Sox, Marlins, and Angels. And the D-backs just keep on rolling. Eugenio Suarez, a massive weekend, 10 RBIs on the weekend. Gino leading baseball in RBIs since the beginning of July by a lot. Yes, that's even more than Aaron Judge. He has more runs driven in. And honestly, over that sample size, I will care about RBI because that means you are helping your team win. That is a thing that has happened, right? Okay, maybe it's not predictive to him being an MVP candidate, but that is a lot of runs that Suarez has contributed to the D-backs efforts. And that's obviously over the stretch when they have been one of the best teams in baseball. So just really, really, really impressive, especially on Sunday where it felt like, you know, the Red Sox kind of were up early. They were up 4-0 through four innings. And as they have so many times in recent weeks, anyone that came in after the starter, but even Houck, it just got worse and worse and worse no matter what pitchers went out there. And I guess it was really, Houck was really most of the issues, I would say, on Sunday. They just kind of left him in there for a little bit too long. But man, I mean, it sucks that this Red Sox pitching staff might sink them, because I really think that the lineup is legitimately awesome and really fun to watch. But that's kind of the way that it's trending. And as you look at the standings right now, they're slipping here. It's, you know, I thought about them as really that obvious alternative, but they're moving. They're what now they are, I think, five, but 4.5 back of Minnesota.
You know what Neil Diamond said, right? Cold, touching cold. Let's also boot up the sorry for your mentions machine.
Yes.
You know, Red Sox get swept.
Yeah.
Final. Diamondbacks 7, Red Sox 5. Oh, people have something to say. That's crazy.
I can't believe it. I can't believe Red Sox fans have feelings about getting swept at home at this point in the season.
They didn't say please. No, I'm just kidding. Another sweep at home. But the Diamondbacks are 36-14 in their last 50. Still would have been nice if the Sox could have won at least one game.
Very reasonable.
Sim to the 2026 season, please.
That's a little too defeatist. I don't know if they're far enough out now where I would press the sim button.
They were entertaining enough this year that I think there will be legitimate optimism come spring training 2025.
Oh, that's true. Oh, sorry. Yes, 2026. Oh, yeah. Well, we're skipping next season. Have you seen what's going on in Worcester? I mean, this farm is cooking. I wish I talked about the more in the prospect conversation last week because Christian Campbell can't stop homering. I mean, there's some reasons for optimism here, but
justice for Chaim Bloom. Kyle says it's getting extremely difficult to watch you guys play on a consistent basis. Red Sox fans, very literal in the mentions. Someone named Jordan says $120 on MLB TV. Well saved. Glad I didn't subject myself to another season of this.
Wow. There's other teams to watch if you spend.
You don't just have to watch.
Clearly an out of market Red Sox fan. So good for him.
Todd Gack says season's over. Rebuild slightly ahead of schedule. Some nice pieces in place and farm looks good. We obviously need pitching.
It's very reasonable.
Yeah.
Like really, really on point there. I think he really kind of nailed it.
Willie says, was a fun season while it lasted. Not even upset like last year. Dude, Red Sox fans, these are not sorry for your mentions. These are thank you for the reasonable replies. Last one.
Hey, yeah, we gotta bring the heat next time. Come on, guys.
From Lencho. Lencho says, Jordan Montgomery should have been a Red Sox.
Ooh,
I don't know about that.
So this was the one I wanted to kind of dig into a little bit more. Is this a reference to either this person is being like, Jordan Montgomery stinks now. He fits on this crappy pitching staff. That's one interpretation, right?
The other is that this person remembers during the winter when the Red Sox pitching needed Jordan Montgomery and then they didn't sign him. And doesn't know that Jordan Montgomery has been absolute buns.
Right. Has moved to the bullpen, right? Like Jordan Montgomery lending credence to the concept that I brought up. I don't know if this was on the show or not, when I was like, is Jordan Montgomery making the D-backs postseason roster? Which I think remains an open question, at least in a short series. Last thing on the D-backs before we move on. After the Padres, we're going to get to them in a second, split with the Mets. D-backs now a game and a half up on San Diego for that top wild card spot. They've won 6 in a row and they have 4.5 up on Atlanta. So D-backs in a good spot here. They are definitely rolling. They still have some questions on the mound as well, but they are in a very, very, very strong position and they are playing this week the Mets. Oh, how about that? They're playing the Mets. They're welcoming the Mets to Arizona. So that'll be a fun series. Where do you want to go next?
I want to do some opportunities. We had that one mop up north of the border and 4 other mop opportunities this weekend. One is still active. And I think let's actually start there. The Detroit Tigers, who are pretty good. We got an email last week that we were breezing over the Tigers. And I want to apologize to that listener. You're right. We have not given the Tigers respect. I believe the Tigers have a 500 record since the beginning of June, or they've been like pretty, they have the 5th best record since the beginning of July. They've been better. It's hard to spend time on the Tigers.
Yes. True. That said, Chad, who emailed us, I am more compelled to watch them because they're calling up basically everybody that's in AAA. Ty Madsen making his major league debut tonight, and a lot of their hitters are just young. So, like, again, we'll have to see which of those guys are good, but they are definitely more watchable. And they took the first 3 games against the White Sox, and they will play a 4th today on Monday, bringing the White Sox to 100 losses before September. They did it, friends. They became the 4th team in Major League Baseball history to get to 100 losses before September, joining the 2003 Tigers, the 1962 Mets, and the 1899 Cleveland Spiders, a.k.a. the 3 worst teams in baseball history. So they are right on track. Obviously, the goal for Grady Sizemore and friends is to not be one of the worst teams of all time. in some ways it's too late, but perhaps they have a big September in them and they can avoid joining this holy trinity of suck atop or at the bottom of the baseball record books.
You know, they got a real nice piece of the schedule coming up here, Jordan.
Yeah.
If you zoom in.
What's next for the White Sox?
They have a relatively easy end to the year, I think.
Okay.
They got the Rangers, who are, there's a win in that. There's a win there.
Probably. Okay, I guess. I mean, again, nothing's easy when you're the 2024 White Sox.
Three against the Mets. That could be that. Three against the Mets. Three against the O's. Three against the Red Sox, who packed it in. Three against Cleveland, who they're 5-5 against this year.
Yeah,
by the way.
That's true. Yeah, no, I know.
A's, Angels, Padres, Angels, Tigers.
Okay, that's definitely encouraging. However, I just want to, again, we are talking about what is already one of the worst teams of all time. A team that if they lose today, it will be the fifth time they've been mopped this year. And I believe there are only other like five mops across the entire league and they account for half of them. So that's who we're talking about.
That's a lot of mopping. Floor's clean. You could just go rearrange your sock drawer. Other mop opportunity. Orioles, Astros. This was a phenomenal series, I have to say. The two teams split. Astros win Thursday and Sunday. O's take the middle two games. If you did not watch these games, I watched them. If you did not watch these games, you'd be like, oh, wow, the O's. Good. Like, they're starting to figure some things out. Not really what happened. Offensively, of the 12 runs they scored in the series, 10 of them came on three swings. Okay. It's like three different swings. So they get shut out by Spencer Arrighetti on Thursday. He in the postgame interview then says Astros are back, which is cool because he's from there, right? Mm. Grew up an Astros fan. Apparently he was at the 2017 parade as a fan.
Love
now
that.
He's getting to say Astros are back. I'm a Spencer Arrighetti fan.
O's
look lifeless for much of Friday. Anthony Santander, go ahead, grand slam in the top
off of Abreu, right?
Off of Abreu. Abreu has a clunker, and it's just like pandemonium at Camden Yards. Like, it was one of the coolest swings of the season.
Totally.
I don't know if you go watch it if you haven't.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Kevin obviously crushed the call. Yeah.
Santander is just a sensational player. He's going to get paid, dude. He's going to get paid. He's just cranking it. Saturday, O's down 2-0 for most of the game, looking totally sluggish. Bases clearing, three-run double from Jackson Holliday on a pinch-hit opportunity. Amazing. They win 3-2. Their only three runs on Sunday were a Ramon Arias three-run homer. Enough Birch Smith, please. He allows back-to-back home runs to Alex Bregman and Yiner Diaz on Sunday Night Baseball. The Orioles bullpen, like, again, there have been a lot of injuries for the O's. But like everyone knew this was an area that they needed to improve on. The front office did not do enough at the deadline. That is a fact. Trevor Rogers already got sent out. He was horrendous in a minor league start on Sunday. I believe he allowed nine earned runs, 10 runs total.
Yeah.
Not great. But this was a split. It was important for the Orioles to get two of these wins. But this is an offense that is kind of still in neutral. Adley Rutschman has not looked good for months now. And they're still, it's just not particularly encouraging.
Yeah. I don't know with these O's. It is amazing how many, and then we're like playing Emmanuel Rivera, like was claimed and was like in the starting lineup. Like I was like, is Mountcastle injured?
Up.
He's injured. Up. Okay. So yeah, some strange things going on with the Orioles, just shuffling through a lot of players that you would think would not be getting regular playing time on a team this good. But credit to the Astros for bouncing back after two difficult losses on Friday and Saturday. And they remain in really strong position here. They are, I think, 4.5 up on Seattle. Seattle did win their series over the weekend, but there is still a comfortable cushion there for Houston. And yeah, if guys like Spencer Arrighetti are going to start pitching well, then they are definitely going to be in a pretty, pretty solid shape.
West Coast road trip on deck for the Orioles, 3 in LA and 3 against the Rockies in Denver before coming home to face the Chicago White Sox.
Mm. Wait, Angels or Dodgers?
Dodgers.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Well, that's got to clarify there because
there's a difference.
I know there's a difference. I'm just saying in terms of my optimism for the Orioles getting hot again, there's certainly a difference there.
We two have more two more, and then we'll take a break. Mets, Padres, they split the four-game set. Let's just, Francisco Lindor is incredible. I want to talk more about him on Wednesday.
Yep.
Dig into him a little bit more. On Sunday, though, Merrill Madness, Jackson Merrill. I went on this podcast like a couple weeks ago and said, why are we even talking about the rookie of the year conversation? It's Paul Skeens. Anything else is just stupid.
Not only that. Sorry to really.
Yeah, I was wrong.
Sorry to. When you said it, you were like, oh, how big of a difference between him and Mason Wynn? And I looked at the numbers and I was like, honestly, you're kind of right. But
since then,
since then, that obviously sounds bad. But also like part of the reason why I was like, no, it's because how many times Merrill has just done this, and maybe you shouldn't over reward like a 6 to 8 incredibly clutch hits. But when it's this, when he's like doing things that we've never seen 21-year-olds do in terms of just clutch home runs, literally ever. Right. I mean, he's up there with Mel Ott. Right. And Sarah Langs has all kinds of incredible fun facts about this. It's unreal, man. And he hits the walk-off homer off Edwin Diaz. And to split the opportunity for these two teams, obviously two teams where every game is ultra important. Profar with another ridiculous big home run in that game as well. So again, a nice, like still a decent weekend for the Mets. Like I would say that there was, but still, as has often been the case with them this year, you're left wanting more. You're like, okay, you clearly have enough talent to like put yourself in position to win a lot of these games. And then you don't for whatever reason. So that's definitely frustrating.
If you're under the age of 23 and they're grouping you with Mel Ott, the sixth letter assassin, you know you're doing something right. Doesn't even matter if it's baseball.
Yes.
Okay. If you're in college and you get an exam back and your professor writes no grade, just writes Mel Ott.
Yeah.
You know you did a good job on it.
Well said. Unfortunately for the Diaz family, that was not the only walk-off home run allowed on Sunday by a Diaz brother, as Alexis Diaz allows a walk-off homer to Yasmani Grandal on Sunday. Pirates taking 3 out of 4 against the Reds. The one game that the Reds won was an absolute rout, where Rowdy Tellez ended up pitching a scoreless ninth, I believe, which had the PNC Park crowd going absolutely wild. Paul Skeens threw very well on Thursday. I would say that's the biggest news here, is that it does not seem like Paul Skeens is going to be shut down, was something that people have speculated as the Pirates have kind of slipped out of postseason contention. It sounds like they're just going to spread his starts out and probably cap it at a little bit of a lower pitch count. And honestly, I think that that's a totally reasonable way to handle it. I think that kind of this off-ramp to the offseason is a good way to do it, instead of just being like, all right, Paul, you're done. I think that is a good way to handle it. And I hope that I'm the benefactor of that, as it seems like he will be pitching in Cleveland this weekend. So very much looking forward to that.
I want to exile these two teams together, the Reds and the Pirates. They're just so disappointing to me. They bum me out so much, and I'm glad. I hope they just play every game against one another the rest of the year, so I don't have to consider them or think about them at all. Let's take a quick break. And when we return, we will talk about the player of the weekend, Garrett Stubbs. Welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, George Schusterman. Let's award our player of the weekend. And maybe it is unfair to give the player of the weekend to someone who only played in one game. Friend of the program, Garrett Stubbs, had a day on Sunday. The Phillies' diminutive backup catcher, who has legitimate like plus speed, by the way, had the day of his life. 4 for 4 with a double, a triple, and a hit by pitch. His OPS climbed like 70 points on Sunday.
Yeah, I actually want to see. 70 points. He had a 525 OPS when he woke up and a 591 when he went to bed. As the Phillies offense finally wakes up, we talk about the Orioles being a little bit sluggish recently as one of the best teams in baseball. Phillies offense has certainly been that. They put up a boatload of runs over the weekend in Kansas City. And while they are unable to sweep because the Royals are still pretty good, it was nice to see a lot of these guys get going here offensively with 11 runs on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday was good because it was against Lugo.
Yeah.
And so it was like, that's a real boy, right? Yep. Real Muto is the one who looks better or looked better over the weekend.
Yep.
Turner is still in Narnia.
In a bad right place. Now. Yep.
Oh my God. He's swinging at first pitches that are not near the zone. He's not squaring up a ball. He's domed up. We can't.
It's strange because with him, I don't know if it makes me feel better or worse that like we've seen this from him before, you know, like we've seen this version of Trey Turner. And so we've seen him come out of it. So it's like, it doesn't make it any better when he's still getting a lot of important plate appearances right now. But yeah, he's obviously a streaky player in that regard, but nice for the Phillies. That's a really big road series win, I would say, for them at a time when, you know, you're losing to some bad teams. You feel like you can't find that momentum again. And Kansas City had been on fire and you know, they had some fight in there, but to just get rolled those last two games was kind of an interesting showing there.
Big week for the Phillies. They head home. 3-game set against Houston, 4-game set against Atlanta. I think I'll be at the last game of the Houston series and the first game of the Atlanta series is my goal.
Mm-hmm. So that's the Phillies. And I will be seeing Kansas City today, doubleheader against Cleveland. I'll be there for both of those games and maybe one of the other ones this week. So excited to see Cleveland versus Kansas City. The standings, I think they're 2.5 back. So it's not as close as we thought it maybe could have been, going into this weekend, but still some massive stakes. And now an opportunity, in fact, because it was a rainout earlier this season. So it'll be 4 games this week, including 2 today.
Vinny Pasquantino went first to home on a double on Friday night. So if you see Vinny and he's breathing heavy, that's why.
All right, let's do one more segment before we throw it into turbo mode. Warm fuzzy feeling. Mariners haven't been giving their fans a lot of warm fuzzy feelings recently, but with a miraculous,
they've been giving them
comeback,
a warm fuzzy feeling that is the inevitable encroaching of death.
Oh right? No, that I thought like a warm, uncomfortable, just unpleasant,
like you sit down
feeling.
You know what it is? Like you sit down on a chair, and it's warm. That's a bad, warm feeling. You know?
Or like you get in your car that's been sitting in 110 degree heat and you like burn your finger on the seatbelt.
you're on a plane and the AC is not working. You're stuck taxiing.
You're just sweating and the guy next to you just smells so bad. Yeah, that's,
and he's fuzzy.
Those are the warm feelings the Mariners have been giving you. But no, on Friday, it seemed like it was tracking once again towards another just terrible, lifeless loss in Dan Wilson's first managerial game at the big league level. And instead, they string together 6 consecutive hits. The Mariners got 6 hits in a row at home.
God is good.
Truly
God is great.
An impossible. I never thought I'd see anything like that. In fact, you know why I didn't thought everything see anything like that? I went to sleep. I didn't stay up for this game. Are you kidding me? You think I thought they were going to come back? And this was, I've had a few of these, like waking up and being like, oh, let's see what happened to the mail. Oh, they won? They won? So,
can you do me a favor? Mm-hmm. I want you to start keeping stats on when you go to sleep and what happens. So you are typically sensational at this. Like your record at picking nights, because you can't stay up for the Mariners every night. We wake up early, whatever. I want to start knowing your record in these games. So if you go to bed and the Mariners are within a run on either side, okay, I want you to write down what happened in the morning.
The thing is, though, is that like that's the, like, generally in recent years when they've come back, like sometimes I'm just picking my spots and it's like, we'll see. Like I want to go to sleep, but like maybe I'll wake up and like there's,
oh, the other team has their B relievers tonight.
Like there's a chance. This is the opposite. This is like, I ain't staying up for this. why don't I stay up to watch them go 0-for-12 again over the last 3 innings? Like, there's no point in doing that. So anyway, instead, they come back, they win. They have a game that I thought they were having on Friday, on Saturday, where they walk a million times, they can't get the run in, they lose. Ultimately, they hang on Sunday for a crucial series win. And the warm fuzzy feeling is that Dan Wilson is, everyone loves Dan Wilson and he wins this first game. So that's nice. But Brian Wu, I mean, my gosh, he now has, I guess, minimum 80 innings. I think the lowest ERA in baseball, or maybe second lowest behind Reynaldo Lopez, who still doesn't have that many innings.
And he's just outstanding. He's pitched into the seventh inning for five consecutive starts after never doing it previously in his career. And he's just he's the five starter. I mean, if they make the postseason and they can line it up, I think he's probably starting one of those first few games. But he is really, really, really something special. So shouts out to him. Huge, huge, huge series victory for the Mariners. And they now welcome Tampa Bay this week, which the optics of that are obvious, right? The team that sold everyone, including Randy Arozarena, to Seattle. That could be a tough look. I'm interested to see how they pitch Randy. And Randy's certainly been struggling a lot recently, too. So they could really use him, kind of get going here.
Also, considering that these two teams are separated, I believe, by a half a game in the standings.
Right, right. So obviously, like
half
at this point,
Mariners are a half game better than the Rays right now.
Now, obviously, the what's most important is the Mariners at this point aren't really focused on the wild card. They're focused on Houston, so it is what it is, but they obviously need to gain some separation for the team that sold as many players as they did at the deadline. All right, Jake, here's my plan for turbo mode.
I'm gonna do it.
Can we finish with Dylan Cruz? Because I think that's big news that we should have talked about more. So do everything and then we'll finish with Dylan Cruz.
Brewers take 2 out of 3 from the A's. Oakland avoids the sweep with a win on Sunday, scoring all four of their runs on 5 singles, which is adorable. That was enough. Mason Miller gets the save. The Brewers are very good. The thing to watch with the Brewers is, do they get a bye? So right now, the Dodgers are 78-53. Okay. That is a game and a half up on the Phillies. The Phillies are 76-54. They're a game up on the Brewers. So who has to play that extra round between LA, Philly, and Milwaukee is kind of a big thing to keep an eye on. The randomness of playing that 3-game set is brutal. Milwaukee's just been keeping pace with these other two teams. We'll see if that continues. Guardians take 2 out of 3 over the Rangers. Jonkenzie Noel remains it. He is the biggest boy. I love watching this gentleman play baseball. Cardinals take 2 out of 3 over the Twins. Andre Pallante, gem on Friday. Pablo Lopez looked really good on Saturday for Minnesota, which is very encouraging. They're going to need him in the postseason. And then a brutal, brutal Twins loss on Sunday. Up 2-1 in the ninth after a clutch Royce Lewis double. Edouard Julien, who is tracking towards the most wrong I've ever been about a player, just makes two brutal, I think it was one misplay and one error in the ninth inning, and the Cards score 2 and take the lead against Yoan Duran. Wilson Contreras fractured his finger, which is bad. Cardinals are probably out of it anyway. Weird series loss for the Twins. Cubs take 2 out of 3 over the Marlins, whatever. The thing here is Pekar Armstrong with one of the most electric 14.08 seconds in the history of the sport with an inside the park home run, racing around the bases, full extension dive, sliding into home, safe, hyped up. PCA has a 793 OPS since July 1st. Okay. And he's doing that with a 255 BABIP. This is not a lucky batting average on balls in play inflated situation. PCA, who's one of the fastest players in baseball, as he showed, is a guy whose BABIP should be at like 320 usually, right? He's going to turn infield hits into singles. So that he's been so productive despite being relatively unlucky is interesting. And all the under the hood stuff, barrel rate, hard hit rate, swing decisions, all are trending up over the last 2 months, which makes sense. Like, he's a 22-year-old rookie.
Yeah. And I would say that's the last thing I'll say about PCA before we get to our last series. It's just like, him playing every day is so important. No matter how disappointing this Cubs season has been, getting him these reps so that we can feel better about PCA, the hitter, going into 2025 is just so, so, so important. So it's been really fun to watch him playing all the time.
The Cubs need all-star level position players. Okay. PCA could be that, and his show, like, if he has a 793 OPS over a full season, that he's going to be like a 6-win player.
Yeah.
You know, just because the defense and the base running is so good. Yeah. Last series, Braves over the Nats. We'll talk about Dylan Cruz in 1 second. Braves win the first two. The Braves are amazing, dude. They've just gone full skeleton crew. They got Gio Urshela. They've got Whit Merrifield, who made 2 brutal errors.
Laureano, dude. I mean, like, Sunday.
Laureano. Like, they've been more banged up than any team in baseball, and that they're still in the mix is impressive. The Nats loss on Friday was brutal. Did you see this?
Yeah.
CJ Abrams, runner on third with two outs, ground ball to CJ Abrams. He just yeets it and Braves win.
But hey, congratulations to the Nationals as they reached base against Raisel Iglesias. Raisel Iglesias, who did throw two scoreless innings in that victory, hit Jacob Young with a pitch. So perfection is over. I guess he still hasn't allowed a hit in like 3 weeks. But the perfect run for Iglesias has concluded. Sale was awesome again. Nice to see Mackenzie Gore throwing a little bit better in that one for them. But the big Nationals news, and we will finish with this, is that Dylan Cruz is coming up. And Dylan Cruz, the number two overall pick in last year's draft, probably deserves a longer conversation. But we will do that on Wednesday after he homers against Nestor Cortez tonight against the Yankees in his major league debut. This is a player who we knew was going to be a big part of the Nationals' future the moment they drafted him. And while he hasn't like shredded the minor leagues the way even like Wyatt Langford did last year, he's already started to show why he was such a sure bet to be a major league contributor in the near future. And while I think the ceiling is a little bit more undefined in a way that is not as exciting, I've never been so confident in a player being just a good major leaguer than Dylan Cruz. Like, this dude is so rock solid, and I think that is what the Nationals just need, right? They probably have their superstar ceiling, ridiculous, oh my God, level talent in James Wood, but to kind of bring that with such someone who probably will be an all-star, just a steady, great major league player, maybe not right away. That's what's so exciting about Dylan Cruz getting to the big league. So he will debut tonight against the Yankees. Looking forward to that. And we will certainly talk about him more substantially as he kind of settles in to the major league level. All right, Jake, I got to go to Progressive Field as we got this doubleheader on tap. I know you don't have any games to go to this weekend, although it sounds like maybe you'll be making your way down I-95 to change that at some point. But we hope you all enjoyed this Monday edition of Baseball Barbercast. Thank you to producer Andrew Hartz. He was out there in Wright screaming, "Please stay Soto." No, please, I don't think he was. He was maybe doing it, sitting, watching at home. Thank you, Hartz, for producing.
It's like a Tim Robinson sketch, dude. It's like, "No, you can't sign with the Mets." I said, "Please." I was nice about it. You have to stay.
You can email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com, and we'll be back on Wednesday. Thank you all for listening.
Sign with the Mets. You can't do that.